Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, June 19. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's latest ceasefire appears to be holding.
So far, we've seen a full commitment on that agreement. We haven't seen any air strike moving on the Khartoum sky.
A UNICEF representative condemned Friday's ADF rebel attack on a secondary school in Uganda's Kasese district. An analyst welcomes an African-led peace mission to Ukraine and Russia. Today, June 19, the UN marks the International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict. They are counting votes in Mali from Sunday's constitutional referendum.
A lot of people did not show up as we expected. Also, we received complaining from other places, like certain cities where they were complaining about the lack of organization and way people could not vote.
And Americans mark Juneteenth today, Monday, a federal holiday that commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's latest ceasefire, which took effect on Sunday morning, appears to be holding, at least according to one observer in Khartoum. The three-day ceasefire agreement was brokered again by the United States and Saudi Arabia to allow the unhindered delivery of humanitarian assistance throughout Sudan. It comes as a humanitarian donor conference is scheduled to start today, Monday. Mohamed Al-Tahishi is a former member of the Sudan Sovereign Council. He tells me that Khartoum was the quietest on Sunday since the beginning of the fighting. However, he says Sudan needs a longer ceasefire to allow humanitarian assistance to reach all parts of the country.
So far, we've seen a full commitment on that agreement. We haven't seen any air strike moving on the Khartoum sky. We haven't heard about fire gun from the many parts of the capital. We haven't seen any official allegations or complaints from any of these two parties. And we haven't seen any sort of military movement. So I can describe Khartoum today as quiet as ever before, at least for these last 2 months. And every single person in this capital can see the difference between the conflict and the introduction of the peace. I think Sudanese people deserve a comprehensive peace.
There is a Sudan humanitarian donor conference taking place on Monday, June 19. Do you think because of this donor conference that this ceasefire, which is especially for humanitarian purposes, can hold?
That, I think, in my opinion, is a positive movement from the international organization and international community. As we do know, there is 25 million Sudanese people desperate for aid, and they are running out of food and basics. So the international comes in the time, in its time. And I think there would be two problems, as you know. One, we don't see an official Sudan administration. And that would be one of the problems. I think there is a lack of trust from the international toward this ongoing administration. And also there is a lack of, a deficit of trust from the Sudanese people as well. So I think the organization need to see the way they can operate the aid directly to the residents. That's number one. Number two, I think a short-term ceasefire agreement isn't enough to allow the organization can reach out the desperate people are living there in the cities and outside the cities. So the international conference require, in my opinion, at least a 1 month or 2 months ceasefire agreement. Because without the ceasefire agreement, would be no way for the organization to find the corridors to go directly for the desperate people.
Mohammed Al-Tahishi is the former Sovereign Council member and a senior peace fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based Public International Law and Policy Group. He was speaking with me from Sudan's capital, Khartoum. The representative of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, in Uganda, says Friday's attack on a secondary school in Kasese District emphasizes the need for all parties to any conflict to respect schools, hospitals, and places of worship. However, Mohamed Munir Salfidin says UNICEF does not advocate for armed protection of schools. Ugandan authorities said the attack killed 41 people, mostly students. Uganda's military blamed the Allied Democratic Front, the ADF rebels, based in the Democratic Republic of Congo, for the massacre. Salfiuddin tells me that UNICEF condemns the attack and is available to assist.
We are really horrified with this event. It's not the first kind of an attack in that area against a school, but it just showed that the parties of conflicts, especially a group like ADF, has no respect to international standards, that certain locations like schools, health facilities, places of worship should always be safe from violence.
I know this happened perhaps in a remote area. What does this say about school protection, protection of children in school? What is it like in Uganda?
As you know, we are not promoting to have, you know, like soldiers protecting schools or hospitals. The protection of these places should come from the shared, you know, conviction that communities and even at times of conflict, the parties to any conflict should respect the standard that such kind of places like schools should be protected from any violence. They shouldn't be targeted at all. We are not promoting the idea of having, you know, people with arms protecting and guarding schools.
What's the latest now from official investigation?
Actually, facts are becoming more and more, I would say, updated at the moment as the number of casualties is increasing. So far as of this morning, the reports indicate that 37 students were confirmed dead. Six students were reported to have been missing and most probably abducted. And there are three community members also confirmed dead. One guard from the school also confirmed dead. And there are a number of people who are seriously injured and are receiving medical care. And depending on the, you know, how some of them who are in critical situation at the moment, how things will develop. We hope that all of them will be saved. But depending on the criticality of some situations, we may see the number of casualties increasing.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. And again, you know, from UNICEF side, we, you know, share our condolences with all the grieved families, and we stand in sympathy and support with the affected community and with the people of Uganda, and specifically the Ministry of Education. I want to reassure them that UNICEF is on their side. Anything we can do at this critical moment, we are happy to deliver.
Mali's long-delayed constitutional referendum took place on Sunday. It is too early to tell whether the yes or the no supporters will carry the day until all votes have been counted. The African Union says the referendum would pave the way for elections in February 2024. Some Malians say the new constitution would give too much power to the president. Moussa Kondo is the executive director of the Sahel Institute, a group that is dedicated to promoting and consolidating democracy in the Sahel region. He tells me that turnout in the capital Bamako and other cities was low.
The referendum went pretty well, and I would not say calm 100% because we heard some places where the president of the bureaus have been, if I could say, kidnapped, but we don't have the confirmation from the authorities yet. But from the information we got from people in the areas saying these have been arrested and took away by gunmen. This happened in Moto region and some other places. As you may know, the referendum did not happen because of security issues and also political aspects, as in Kidal, but pretty quiet in other places around the country.
So you are saying that in places like Bamako, the referendum took place without problem?
The information I have right now, people been out voting not as much as we expected or we have seen during the campaigning time, but people been out to vote as I did myself, pretty quiet in the places I've been also around different neighborhoods, been the same, people been out and vote.
What do you think was the turnout? Was the turnout high or low or medium? How was it?
I would say low because a lot of people did not show up as we expected. Also, we received complaining from other places like certain cities where they were complaining about the lack of organization and way people could not vote. And also here, even in Bamako and other bigger cities, people did not go out like as we expected. So definitely, I would say relatively low without having all the statistics, all the figures from the authorities.
When do you think the results will be out?
So we have got a lot of digital involvement in the process. So hopefully we can get sense of what's happening now as the bureaus closed a couple of times ago, see what they will tell us about the first estimation or ideas about the participation and the result.
Musa Kondo is the executive director of the Sahel Institute, a group that is dedicated to promoting and consolidating democracy in the Sahel region. He was speaking with us from Bamako. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 19. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Hundreds of millions of people around the world are affected in war by sexual violence, torture, and repression. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said disturbing reports across the globe are a reminder that sexual violence is still persisting despite international commitments to end it. And as the world marks the International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, today, June 19, the UN says those responsible must face justice. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The International Day for Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict is observed every year on June 19th to raise awareness about sexual violence in conflict and to strategize ways to end it. According to the United Nations, this year's day focuses on technology and the digital divide. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says accessible technology can alert people of danger and help prevent and end these crimes. In his statement, and I quote, "While stigma too often causes survivors to walk in shame, perpetrators walk free. Today, on the International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, we stand in solidarity with survivors and everyone supporting them, and we commit to redoubling our efforts to prevent atrocities and hold those responsible to account." End of quote. The UN says sexual violence is affecting women and children in war-torn countries such as Sudan, Haiti, Ukraine, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Somalia. Volker Turk, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, describes the situation in Sudan as heartbreaking.
General Al-Burhan, General Dagalo, you must issue clear instructions in no uncertain terms to all those under your command that there is zero tolerance for sexual violence, that perpetrators of all violations must be held accountable, civilians must be spared, and you must stop this senseless violence now.
Natalia Kanem is the executive director of the United Nations Population Fund. She says those who survive wartime rape, forced marriages, and sexual slavery are left with lasting physical and emotional scars and are robbed of health, dignity, peace, and justice.
Women and girls in conflict settings face a heightened risk of sexual violence. Increasingly, this gross violation of human rights is becoming normalized. This is not normal. This needs to stop. Treat gender-based violence, including sexual violence, as the full-blown crisis that it is, and do everything in our power to stop it.
New and prolonged conflicts have driven much of the increase, putting millions of people at risk of sexual violence. Many who become victims find it difficult to access help as conflict and insecurity break down health and justice systems. Sexual violence in conflict is underreported amid the terror and chaos of war. While women and girls experiencing the most affected, men and boys and LGBTQ plus people have also been targeted. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
An analyst says he welcomes the mission of seven African nations to find a peaceful resolution of the Ukraine war. The presidents of Comoros, Senegal, South Africa, and Zambia, along with top officials from Egypt, Republic of Congo, and Uganda, visited Ukraine and Russia over the weekend. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahim Makan tells me that a peaceful end to the war would benefit the economies of African countries.
Knowing the impact of this particular war on African economies and on the life of millions of Africans, I think the African head of state decided to go ahead in trying to not end the war, but to at least make sure that economic impact on countries will not go higher. And maybe the de-escalation that they want between Russia and Ukraine will also help to really diminish the oil prices and others. I think it's just defending the interests of the African country first and also pleading for peace.
Given the positions of both Ukraine and Russia, I think Ukraine is saying that any negotiation must start with the withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukrainian soil, and where Russia is right now, is there a possibility of a success for this particular trip?
From what I heard so far, I think there are possibilities of at least conversation on two issues. The possibility of Russia to withdraw for some of the territory of Ukraine, and the possibility for the international community, particularly those who are behind the legal action against Putin, at least to suspend the legal action taken against Putin so that people can start the conversation about the future of the war. Both sides at least agree with that. And Russia was even saying that they are happy to discuss with anybody who will really want to have peace. So I think at least for those two issues that were raised, if there is a beginning of a solution to that, that will have an impact on the international economy and will have an impact on the prices, oil prices, the prices of cereal for African countries. And that's what African countries want, in my view.
Ibrahim Makan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Today, Monday, is Juneteenth, a federal holiday that commemorates the end of slavery here in the United States. President Joe Biden made it a federal holiday in 2021. Ron Daniels is president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. He is also convener of the National African American Reparations Commission. Daniels tells me that while African Americans have made progress since emancipation in 1863, not all the vestiges of slavery have been eradicated.
Juneteenth is a very special holiday because the enslaved Africans were largely emancipated in 1863, January 1st, 1863, by presidential proclamation, Abraham Lincoln, the well-known Emancipation Proclamation. However, through some strange issue or problem, there were people who, in Texas in particular, who did not get the word as they were working on plantations and whatever. They thought they were still enslaved. And so it was not until June 19th, that's where the word Juneteenth comes from. It comes from the word June and then 19th, combining it. So it was not until June 19th, 1865, that a U.S. federal general proclaimed and made the enslaved Africans in Texas, particularly in Galveston, Texas, aware that they were free.
Now it's a federal holiday.
It is a federal holiday, but bear with me for a minute, because it's important to understand that by our own self-determination, because of the growing Black freedom struggle, particularly as we got into the 21st century, Juneteenth began to be larger and larger because there was now a growing demand, for example, for reparations, a growing demand for more criminal justice. So that robust movement is the movement which peaked a couple of years ago under President Biden, who took the opportunity at the recommendation of a number of members of Congress, but most notably Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston, Texas, in 2018, or it may have been 2019, actually. President Biden put the legislation was put forth, and actually, amazingly, both Democrats and Republicans signed on to Juneteenth as a federal holiday. The issue is, do we need more holidays or do we really need more racial justice?
Ron Daniels is president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. He is also convener of the National African American Reparations Commission. He was speaking with us from New York City. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results of matches played in the AFCON 2023 qualifying series this past weekend. In Monrovia, two goals from Victor Osimhen helped the Super Eagles defeat Sierra Leone 3-2 to qualify for the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations with one game to spare. The third goal for Nigeria in the game played at the Samuel Kanyon Doe Stadium in Monrovia, Liberia, on Sunday was scored by Kelechi Iheanacho. Elsewhere, Cape Verde showcased their dominance in the resounding 3-1 triumph over Burkina Faso at Estadio Nacional de Cabo Verde. With this victory, Cape Verde secured their place in the upcoming Cote d'Ivoire tournament, marking a significant achievement for the Blue Sharks. Also qualifying for the 2023 AFCON on Sunday is West African side Mali, who earned a 2-0 triumph over Congo on Sunday to book a place in Africa's Premier Football Competition. In tennis news, Morocco have been crowned champions of the 2023 Billie Jean King Cup of Africa Group 3 tournament at the Nairobi Club on Saturday. The Moroccans outsmarted Tunisia 2-1 to emerge the best, while home team Kenya dispatched Zimbabwe 2-1 in the fight for bronze. The Moroccans, thanks to the win, earned the nod to represent Africa at the Euro-Africa tournament next term. And on to Ghana, where a 4-day African Paralympic Committee regional sports training program organized by the Ghana Paralympic Committee is underway in Accra, Ghana. In all, 15 countries are participating in the program aimed at improving the technical aspects of the sport ahead of the African Paralympic Games scheduled for September in Ghana. Participating countries include Seychelles, Togo, Benin, Mali, Mauritius, Sierra Leone, Burkina Faso, Senegal, The Gambia, Madagascar, Nigeria, Liberia, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, and Ghana. Egypt have emerged Squash World Cup champions after coming from behind to beat Malaysia 2-1 in front of a packed crowd at the Express Avenue Mall in the Indian city of Chennai. The country was defending its title at the event, which was last played in 2011. In a thrilling final, Egypt fought their way back from 1-0 down to win 2-1, thanks to victories for young stars Ali Abu Eleni and Feruz Abdulkarim. Australia also came from behind to beat Colombia 2-1 in the fifth place playoff, and South Africa beat Hong Kong 3-1 to seal seventh spot. In basketball news, Tanzania is hosting the FIBA AfroCan 2023 Zone 5 qualifiers. The regional qualifying event started on Saturday and will run until Friday, June the 23rd. And that's it for this morning's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, June 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have